Welcome to Ufahamu Africa, a podcast about life and politics on the continent. I'm Rachel Beatty-Rita, one of your hosts, and today we have a very special panel discussion taking up recent announcement by Senegalese President Macky Sall to postpone the presidential elections originally scheduled for February 25th. Now, this is the first time a presidential election has ever been postponed or delayed in Senegal, and it's really part of a much larger story, a series of very concerning moves by the current president to extend his stay in power, to limit opposition challengers, and to use the power of decree and the stamp of the National Assembly to do so, thereby weakening trust in the democratic process and the institutions of the country. Now, if you've been listening to our prior episodes on Senegal, you'll know that over the past year, there have been a series of debates over candidate eligibility and criminal charges against one of the major opposition challengers, Ousmane Sonko, and that current President Macky Sall is coming up on the end of his two terms. He was very hesitant to confirm that he was actually going to step down after the end of these two terms, which was causing a lot of protest and consternation and concern. And then finally, in early July of 2023, Macky Sall announced he would definitively not seek a third term and he would put in place plans for his successor, who he nominated as current Prime Minister Amadou Ba. Now, there have been a series of continuing questions about which opposition candidates would be eligible to run for the presidency. Ousmane Sonko, as we noted, around questions of his eligibility and his currently is in jail. His deputy candidate, Bassirou Faye, who Ousmane Sonko is now backing from the disbanded or ineligible PASTEF party, but who is also detained on charges of terrorism and insurrection. There have been also questions about the eligibility of the son of former President Abdoulaye Wade, PDS candidate Karim Wade, among others. So this is the context, the kind of leading up to this announcement of the postponement of the election. So the current situation in a quick beat is that Macky Sall delayed elections, which he claimed was necessary to resolve a dispute between the judiciary and the parliament over this candidate list, over who would be eligible and who would be on the ballot. And the dispute came allegedly because of the need to investigate a corruption charge against the Constitutional Court and their handling of this candidate eligibility. So there's a charge against two members of the Constitutional Court that they were making other candidates ineligible, in particular Karim Wade, on the grounds of dual nationality, despite him having renounced his French citizenship, and in favor of Prime Minister Amadou Ba. So then Senegal's parliament, a few days later, this week, Monday, approved a nearly 10-month election delay. So therefore, they kind of legitimized President Macky Sall's delay, postponing the vote that was planned for February until December 15th, which thereby extends President Macky Sall's term, which was due to end at the beginning of April. The decision is now being challenged by opposition members in court and through protests on the street. In this context, mobile phone and internet was also down, clamped down, as protests were spreading. And some opposition figures, members of parliament, were attempting to block this National Assembly vote of the extension of Macky Sall's term. They were removed from the National Assembly by the police. And so now there are further technical questions about the legitimacy of that vote in the National Assembly, with opposition members having been detained and removed. So in sum, critics are accusing Sall, who was due to leave office on April 2nd, of effectively staging a constitutional coup d'etat. So to go into depth on this, what is happening, we are joined today by two expert guests. First, Michelle Gavin, the Ralph Bunche Senior Fellow for Africa Policy Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. She has over 20 years of experience in international affairs, in government and nonprofit roles. And she was formerly the managing director of the Africa Center, a multidisciplinary institution dedicated to increasing understanding of contemporary Africa. She is a long-serving member of the State Department, and from 2011 to 2014, she was the U.S. ambassador to Botswana and served concurrently as the U.S. representative to the Southern African Development Community, SADC. Our second guest is Bamba Ndiaye, who is the creator and host of the African Podcasts. Our guests will know him as last year's non-resident fellow for Ufahamu Africa. And this episode will also be streaming over at The Africanist. He is an assistant professor of African studies at Emory University's Oxford College and a former Mellon postdoctoral fellow at Cornell University's Society for the Humanities. Bamba Ndiaye earned a PhD in comparative humanities at the University of Louisville, and his research interests are at the intersection of Black Atlantic social movements, critical race theory, Black Atlantic popular cultures, mobility, and Pan-Africanism, and he is a keen follower of Senegalese politics. Please take a listen. So welcome to Ufahamu Africa. I'm here today joined by my guest, Michelle Gavin from the Council on Foreign Relations and Bamba Ndiaye at Emory University. And I'm so pleased to be able to have this conversation around what is happening in Senegal around the postponement of the presidential elections. So today we're going to start out with a little bit of an explainer about what is happening and then go deeper into why, what are the currents, and what does it mean? So Bamba, I want to start with you and then ask Michelle the same question. Can you explain for our listeners what is happening? Put it into some context for those who are following the situation and for those who are new to the context. What's happening in Senegal right now?
Rachel, thank you very much for the invite. So over the weekend on Saturday, February 3rd, President Macky Sall addressed the nation and announced that he signed a new decree, basically canceling the presidential election that was scheduled for February 25th, 2024. And the reason he gave was that there is an ongoing conflict between the judiciary and parliament. In other words, two judges from the Constitutional Court, Cheikh Ngaï and Judge Cheikh Tidiane Koulibaly, were accused by lawmakers of the Democratic Senegalese Democratic Party, also known as PDF. They were accused of corruption. And they also argue that these judges were corrupt by Amadou Ba, who is the current prime minister of Senegal and also the presidential candidate of the ruling coalition. And he, according to the lawmakers, corrupted these two judges in order to eliminate the presidential candidate of PDS, or the Senegalese Democratic Party, Karim Wade. And Karim Wade is currently in exile in Doha, if I'm not mistaken. And the other argument he gave, that President Macky Sall gave, was that there was another presidential candidate, this time Rose Wadini, who they found out had a double nationality, French and Senegalese. And per the constitution of Senegal, a presidential candidate can only be a Senegalese citizen. And according to Macky Sall, because of all of that, and also the fact that many presidential many candidates who did not make it to the final list of presidential candidates also approach him about some irregularities that they notice in the endorsement process. And I can explain later on what this endorsement process is about, and that they were not happy that they were disqualified. So he said all of those elements concurred to justify the cancellation of the presidential election. Now, this is unprecedented in the history of Senegal. Since 19, Since Senegal became independent in 1960, there has never been a presidential election postponed or canceled. And it also happened in a very particular time because it was few hours before the campaign season started. And upon making that decision, which was shocking yet not surprising, President Macky Sall thrust the country once again into another spiral of violence and also resistance. And that's currently happening in Senegal.
Bamba, thanks so much for that overview. So, Michelle, can you add on to that in terms of thinking about how this builds upon a certain context, questions over Macky Sall's candidacy, whether or not he'd be seeking a third term, and the kind of dynamics around the ruling party candidate and opposition challenges?
Sure. Well, first off, I'm so pleased to be joining you, Rachel and Bamba, and so glad we're discussing this because I know I'm deeply worried about what's unfolding in Senegal, and I think that you both are as well. So one of the things that I find interesting about the way President Sall framed this when he made this, I completely agree, shocking announcement. The framing was sort of, well, there are these outstanding questions and disputes as if this were some act of protecting Senegal's democracy. But there have been questions and disputes for quite some time, right? We had President Sall was reluctant to confirm that he would not run for a third term. For a very long time, even in the face of costly and damaging protests on the streets, as people were certain that he was going to try to do this, there, this issue of eligibility to contest for the presidency is not something that just popped up with this final list. Of course, you have Ousmane Sonko, and who is a I'd say in the populist mold, very popular in some quarters, political figure who has been dealing with a number of criminal allegations, judicial procedures. Is incarcerated now. But this, there have been questions about weaponizing the judiciary essentially to eliminate potent political opponents. And it's not just Sonko, obviously, in the case of Karim Wade is another one. So this context, right? It's been a couple of years of questions about whether or not President Sall would relinquish power, whether or not powerful opposition figures would be able to contest for the presidency. And the Senegalese people have repeatedly taken to the streets in protest, obviously demonstrating concern, right, around the fairness and integrity of these processes heading into elections. And it's all just so incredibly ironic in some ways because President Sall himself came to power, buoyed essentially by a movement that was rejecting his predecessor's attempt to cling on and seek a third term. And there was a lot of concern in that initial political wave that brought Macky Sall to power about manipulation of Senegal's democracy. And now here we find ourselves in this unprecedented territory, but it's President Sall who appears to be the manipulator.
Absolutely. I think that's so well put, and particularly, thinking about the ways in which these questions about eligibility are really at the heart of a contestation over the role of the judiciary or other bodies that determine candidate eligibility and their role in democracy. And so I want to pose both of you the question about, in reality, The way in which the judicial process has worked and the president's ability to issue a decree about when the elections will be held, and then supporting that decree through the National Assembly vote to say, yes, these elections will be postponed. They will be held December 15th, many months from now. And so I'm wondering, you know, the use of the institutional bodies, the judiciary, the National Assembly, the executive's decree power, is it part of a broader trend of using nominally democratic institutions and procedures to pursue executive aggrandizement or to pursue the postponement and prolongment of the current president Macky Sall's tenure to potentially weaken opposition? How do you see the technical use of these other bodies to as a part of Senegal's democracy overall? As Michelle noted, the citizens are protesting, the opposition are protesting, and yet in a technical manner, we could be saying these are democratic institutions kind of being used in proper form. Bamba, how do you see that question?
Yeah, I think here the term that I would use and excuse the repetition is misuse. They are misusing these institutions. I think the spirit of these institutions are quite noble if they work the way they should. But if they are weaponized as they have been in the last few years, it becomes problematic. And the weaponization of the justice system has not started with Macky Sall, but he has taken it to really unprecedented levels, right? And what is ironic is that in his address, he alludes to the separation of power, right? But we know there's no separation of power in the Senegalese context. The president is also the head of the judiciary. In any respectable democracy, that should not be, you know, the case. You cannot be the head of the executive and the judiciary. He also yields tremendous amount of power in parliament, right? So all of that, and on top of that, you can see, especially in the last 3 years, as Michelle mentioned, people like Sonko, right? Basiru Jamai Faye, who is the presidential candidate of the dissolved PASTEF party. The way they were incarcerated, and also the way artists, activists, right, protesters have been incarcerated, left a lot to be desired about the Senegalese judiciary. We have a double standard in the judiciary. If you are against the president and the regime, you could be locked up for anything as simple as a Facebook post or an emoji or a WhatsApp message, right? But if you are close to the regime or part of the regime, you basically get a free card. We have so many scandals that had been revealed, financial scandals. I'm thinking of someone like Mamadou Diallo, who was accused of embezzling 94 billion CFA. And there was no investigation about that. The former minister of tourism, Mambenya, also, there were allegations of mismanagement and embezzlement of a large sum of money. And who gets to be the victim? Right? Ousmane Sonko. For defamation, and that's actually what they used to rule him out of the final list, or a final list of candidates. So what is happening right now is in Senegal is there is like an encroachment in the judiciary, in the also the legislative, and what the legislative power has done over the weekend or on Monday is also unprecedented, because the legislative power according to some legal analysts, they cannot, right? They cannot, MPs cannot investigate the Constitutional Court. They have a way to regulate, the judiciary has a way to regulate itself. And what we have seen, unfortunately, under Macky Sall is that, you know, there is no respect for the law when it comes to members of the regime, because also only the Constitutional Court has the ability to pronounce itself a matter of postponement or cancellation of the election. The president does not have that power. And Article 103 of the Constitution is clear. There cannot be any a constitutional revision, even if it was allowed, does not concern or cannot concern the duration of the term or the number of terms. But Macky Sall and his government just overlooked all of that and basically did whatever they could to keep themselves in power. So as we speak right now, I think, well, democracy is dead. There's a complete demise of democracy. And the judiciary is not necessarily, you know, functioning the way it should. And I am curious to see in the coming days what the Constitutional Court is actually going to do, because the opposition has introduced resolutions to see that, to ask the Constitutional Court to strike down the decree and also the law that has just been passed in the National Assembly.
Right. So that would be returning the power to the Constitutional Court to set and determine the election date. Now, Michelle, this relates to what you were just kind of referring to as well, that Macky Sall is, it's a bit ironic because the way in which he himself came to power by contesting an incumbent who was technically, legally going for a third term. And now those questions have been swirling. So too is it ironic because when he was, Macky Sall was originally running for president in that context, he said that it would be completely impossible for the current president then to extend his term by even one day, right? So how do you see this kind of use of democratic institutions in this context?
Well, I completely agree that misuse is the right word, and in some cases, weaponization is the right word. And I find this so incredibly dangerous, because once you've dressed up authoritarian machinations in democratic clothing, it's nearly impossible to have the kind of public trust in governing institutions that is, you know, sort of an essential ingredient of a functioning democracy. So once it feels like any one leader's self-interest can be given the window dressing of institutional legitimacy, it's difficult to understand why citizens should go out and vote, why they should try to hold representatives responsible, because it all feels like an elaborate piece of theater. So I think this is incredibly dangerous. I was interested to see the U.S. government seizing on this question about whether or not the legislative vote to establish a December date was legitimate or not, given that security forces had removed some opposition lawmakers from the scene before the vote was taken. So that I found that interesting, because clearly there's an attempt to externally to try and kind of claw back the legitimacy of these institutions and try to point to the most glaring possible ways in which procedures weren't actually quite followed and this is not quite right.
So that's a really, you know, it's a great question, because it's It is, you know, what are the technical aspects that people focus on and to show that it's not right? And how do citizens respond? I mean, we've seen a lot of citizen protests, citizens expressing concern. And I think one of the big questions in Senegal is, do citizens come out to vote or continue to participate within the democratic institutional arena, as well as keep that kind of extra institutional activity of protest and social mobilization alive, as, you know, keeping the pressure kind of on both fronts? And how does that play out? Now, in Senegal, the voters do have the experience of voting against presidents who wish to stay on, right? So this is one of the great strengths of Senegal's democracy. Bamba, do you think that is, you know, from citizen perspective, do you think that's likely to continue to fuel democratic engagement versus exit and disillusionment?
I think Senegalese people are more determined than ever to restore democracy. And I mean, seriously, to remove this regime. Right. If you look at the mobilization that is currently happening on the ground, it's going to be very hard for president to for the president to make it all the way to December. Right. I just think that it might be impossible. As we speak, trade unions have met and like they have decided to call on a general strike tomorrow, starting at 10, which haven't happened under the Macky Sall regime. So I think that's a sign that the pressure is coming. And you also have the church, the Catholic Church, the League of Imams also released a statement, and they took a stand against the constitutional coup that just happened. You have civil society. They just formed another collective called Arsunyu. I think it's called Arsunyu Election, meaning protecting our election, that gathers opposition parties, civil society, protest movements, and they are going to also coordinate live action. And on top of that, as you mentioned, the United States, for instance, released State Department released a statement calling for the respect of constitutional order as well as the restoration of the internet, which I think since then has been back. But you have ECOWAS that, you know, released a new statement because the first one was quite weak and very ambiguous and really not not condemning the coup that just happened. And I think also the European Union has similarly done, taken similar steps this morning. So the pressure is coming from everywhere. On top of that, the people that I've talked to and seen on TV and talked to over the phone, they are extremely determined to be out there and fight this coup. So I really think that he has no chance of, or very little chance of, making it all the way to December 2024. Plus, you have a big fringe of the, a big segment of the society that said that after April 2nd, which is the official end date of his term, he will be considered illegitimate. He cannot represent Senegal anywhere, and he cannot sign off on anything in the name of Senegal. So it's going to be very hard months coming up for the regime.
Absolutely. I think that that end date of his term really kind of creates this focal point. And in particular, it may create a focal point for international bodies or international actors in terms of diplomacy. So Michelle, kind of thinking about, as Bamba mentioned, the U.S. role, response, potential interventions, how do you see the international domain writ large and U.S. action in particular, as well as regional bodies like ECOWAS or others? Do they have a role to play, and are they influential at this point?
The question of influence is a really interesting one. I think, you know, for actors like the US, they have no choice but to try their best to influence the situation and essentially get a return to constitutional order in Senegal, not because the US has a you know, a particular fondness for one candidate over the other, but you know, in the broader frame of democratic backsliding, rising authoritarianism, this rash of coup d'etat we've seen in the region, the notion of Senegal's democracy getting wobbly is an incredibly worrying trend, right? This has been such a resilient society. All the polling shows that Senegalese people still very much value democracy, but are very frustrated with how it's been working. And so, you know, from a geopolitical lens, from this notion that the Biden administration has laid out that they want to champion and defend democracy, the idea of sitting on one's hands or sort of making accommodations is a no-go. But at the end of the day, external influence is limited. You know, I think ECOWAS is struggling right now with the exit of several of the now military-led countries and the fact that, you know, they've now had this experience of laying out an ultimatum in the case of Niger's coup and then having to walk it back kind of embarrassingly. It looks a bit a paper tiger, and the most powerful countries in West Africa are very internally focused right now with limited appetite for devoting a lot of energy, time, resources to these regional issues. So in one sense, I think the leaders of ECOWAS are keenly aware that the sub-regional organization's credibility is a bit shaky right now, and they want to take a firm stand, but I think also are aware of the limits of their influence. But there's, you know, there isn't really another good choice but to try their best to nudge Senegal sort of back into regular order.
Yeah, it's exactly that question. You know, both, I think, as Bamba was saying, on the domestic side and on the external side, no one wants to sit passively. And then the question is, okay, so what actions and who can work together in partnership to really put the pressure on to resolve this moment of, you know, self-created crisis? So on that, you know, Bamba, I wanted to turn to you and think a little bit about the role of the ruling party in this moment. I think it's actually a really interesting kind of internal dynamic story. So we know Macky Sall, as Michelle was saying, has had this kind of ongoing question, this kind of delayed ability to say that he certainly was not running for a third term. And then in doing so, appointing or kind of nominating his successor, the current prime minister. Now, the sense within the ruling party seems to be that there's some degree of factionalization or split in internal support for, you know, this kind of successor plan and candidate in particular, Minister Amadou Ba. And so in part, we see that because BBY, the ruling party, was part of this allegation of corruption against the Constitutional Court members, right? And saying that Prime Minister Amadou Ba was at the heart of that corruption allegation. So what is happening within the ruling party, and how do you see support for Prime Minister Amadou Ba's candidacy? Is he unlikely to ultimately run for election? And is this all just a big stall to allow BBY to select a new candidate?
Yes, I think it's the latter. Amadou Ba is not popular at all. They tried to impose him to the voters several times, and it hasn't worked. He cannot mobilize enough, even when he goes out to, you know, inaugurate things, or he just doesn't draw people. He's not charismatic either, compared to other prime ministers or opposition leaders. And as you mentioned, there's a huge infighting within Benno Bokuyaka, or BBY. And because a faction of the coalition does not support Amoruba, he is not unanimous within the party. And then they also thought that there were more charismatic and more competitive leaders within the party who should have been the candidates, such as Bun Abdoulaye John, the former prime minister, right? Or Abdoulaye Daouda Diallo, who was the former, I think, minister of interior. So that dynamic has played into this coup, because those who supported Amoruba seemed like they wanted to go on with the election. And those who were not in support of him and didn't think that he would do well, they are actually the ones who pushed this constitutional coup. Now, the other thing is, if they are logic and consistent with themselves, and if they really genuinely concerned about the corruption allegations, well, President Macky Sall should have either fired Amadou Ba or asked him to resign. And so far, neither of them has happened. So what does that say about his justification? What does it say about Senegalese democracy, right? Now, I don't know if this will change much, like the fact of postponing the election would change much in terms of the election outcome. It's going to be extremely hard, and I would say mathematically impossible for them to win the election, given that since 2012, their electorate has been dwindling. During the last election, I think they scored about 45%, 46% in the legislative election. And since then, they have alienated the electorate so much that it's going to be hard for them to even make it to the first round. And on top of that, he's adding this coup. I just think that no matter what President Macky Sall and his camp does, it's going to be extremely hard for them to win the upcoming elections.
Yeah, Michelle, do you see that as well, with the kind of fatigue of the incumbent, the questions of internal succession?
Absolutely. And the, you know, increasingly sort of clumsy machinations. And so for me, the question I keep asking myself is, what was he thinking? What is the game plan here? Because I absolutely agree with the analysis. It'd be very difficult to hang on until December. So how, I ask myself, was the president getting incredibly bad advice? Was he somehow so removed, so in a bubble that he couldn't read the room? Because this does not seem like a sort of tenable strategy.
That's exactly. So, you know, on one hand, if we think that his real desire is to hang on to power for as long as possible, then one could see how we got to where we are. But if his desire is to successfully appoint a successor and have that successor elected, then, you know, we're in on a very wrong pathway. Mamba, what do you think is going on to answer that question? What is he thinking?
I don't think he's thinking at all, because an intelligent president would just let the election go on and, you know, come what may. But now what he has done is, of course, angered his people, angered the international community. And from this point on, he has zero credibility. I don't know what he was planning to do after his tenure, but it's going to be hard to even see him out there or to convert, you know, himself into something else, right? So people were floating the idea of him potentially running for a UN seat or things like that. I don't think people's going to let him do that after what just happened, right? So maybe he might just retire and write books and something like that. But the reality is the division is very profound within his party. The little electorate they had is now divided among several candidates. Bun Abdullah John is a candidate, and he is a pillar of Benno Bokuyaka. You also have Ali Ngundai, who also left the coalition, and he is a pillar of the movement, of the coalition. Similarly, you have someone like Mamboi Jao, who also left, and Mimi Ture, the former prime minister. So all of that has taken or, you know, away from the electorate of Benno Bokuyaka. And something else important to mention is that there are parties within his coalition, the leftist parties within his coalition, that also released a statement against the cancellation of the election. So mm-hmm. we can expect, you know, even more departures from the coalition. On top of that, you can add two other important pillars of the regime who left. Abdulatif Koulibaly left the government. He resigned. And more recently, we have the former minister of health, Eva Marie-Colsec, who also resigned. And you have other people, you know, calling for, wondering what Macky Sall is doing, like Zara Ian Cham, for instance, right? So all of that combined, I just do not see how he's going to make it out of this situation unscathed. I just don't see that.
I think you raised such a good point, both in terms of the, you know, the kind of splitting off is both a cause and a symbol, you know, an indicator of the deep problems that Macky Sall faces and, you know, what's left of the BBY. But you also raise the point of what happens to a president, what are their prospects as they're leaving office? And particularly for presidents who are toying with the ability to stay on, we know, looking across the world, if presidents have good prospects to leave the presidency and then, you know, be the elder statesman, be the global, you know, peacemaker and dignitary, that is one more factor that can really help them to want to leave a democratic credential legacy. And interestingly, with Macky Sall, despite all of his hesitation and unwillingness to say he wasn't going to run for a third term and how that was creating all of this internal consternation, his treatment of opposition, you know, jailing of Osman Zonko, when he finally announced, I'm not going to run for a third term, he was still celebrated on that international stage. And so it looked like that route was very open and kind of welcoming to him. And so I wonder how you see, Michelle, his prospects changing. Do you think doors are closing or is there still a kind of exit ramp for him?
If there is an exit, it's, you know, getting narrower and narrower. I think you're absolutely right. And I think it was, frankly, quite deliberate, the warm reception that came in the wake of him finally saying he would not seek a third term, intending to incentivize him and signal, right, that there would be a set of compelling opportunities going forward. And there are many good examples, as you say, around the world and right in the neighborhood of West Africa, that Good luck, Jonathan, springs to mind. You know, President Weah, who just transferred power in Liberia, has probably got the best reputation he's had in a while, just by the act of allowing the will of the voters to stand. And you know, he has obviously plenty of personal wealth and can do what he likes. But there are clear examples to follow. So I ask myself exactly this question: what is the future for Macky Sall? Both in this immediate sense of the period from now until apparently elections in December, with his support dwindling and increasingly united electorate angry about this kind of usurping of their democratic process. But then after that, it's worrisome, right? Because that, in some ways, once one crosses the Rubicon far enough, then you're left in the autocrats club, and there are global forces, right, that are interested in expanding that club and making it an appealing option. So I am in no way suggesting that there is some external hand behind this. That's not what I'm saying, but I do think there are many external parties who've been trying for a while to signal what the future might look like, depending on kind of fidelity to the democratic process.
Absolutely, right. And that warm reception itself is part of that signaling. So let me end by posing you both the question of what's next. I know it's so hard to look into our crystal balls, but what do you see as possible pathways forward? What might be your best case scenario? As Bamba was alluding to, he sees it hard to make it to December elections. So could something, you know, be resolved sooner and that handover take place? What's the likely worst case scenario there? You know, Michelle was just alluding to the autocratic entities around the world who might also be, you know, supportive of a worst case scenario. And what do you see as the most likely scenario? Bamba, I'm going to ask you first.
Well, I think what should happen right now, what is urgent, is for him to come back to reason. And number one, free the political prisoners. He must free Basiru Jamaifai. He must free Usman Sonko. People who were saying, oh, Sonko was the problem. Now Sonko is in prison and we see how things turned out. So those must come out of prison. They must be freed. He must free the activists, right? And the artists, the journalists in prison. The political prisoners must come out. That's number one. Number two, he needs to, equally important, he needs to restore the constitutional order. The constitutional court will pronounce itself on the matter, hopefully in the coming days. And we hope that they will choose the right side of history. Now is the time, is the time for the constitutional court to redeem itself. And then he has no other choice but leave the government and the country in good hands, because he found a peaceful country when he came to power, right? The election in 2012 was tense, but President Watt accepted his defeat and handed him a country in order. And he has an obligation to hand Senegal back to the Senegalese people in order. So that's the best case scenario. Now, we don't want what happened in, nobody wants that, what happened in Burkina Faso in 2014 or what happened in some neighboring countries recently to happen there. And that would be the worst case scenario. So this is a call to President Macky Sall. Please come back to reason, restore the constitutional order, free the political prisoners, and, you know, leave us in peace.
Yeah, fantastic. So well said in terms of, you know, what every democratic citizen asks of their president, to allow that process to the citizens and the votes to make the call for the next leader. Michelle, what do you see as likely?
This may be the rare case where I'm optimistic that perhaps the vigor and scope of condemnation of this decision, right, might prompt a rethink sooner rather than later, and things can get more or less back on track. The worst case, yes, certainly a military intervention would be disastrous. And Senegal has a very proud tradition of civil military relations that respect the constitutional order. I am very concerned about violence in the context of these protests that are unquestionably coming, and we have seen violent confrontations in the context of demonstrations over the past few years. And so I'm concerned about loss of life. I'm concerned about frustration and anger at government undermining the sort of general social compact that is respectful of norms and the rule of law. And I'm concerned that Senegal's young people, that this experience will leave them distrustful and cynical about democracy. And I think those would be terrible outcomes.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, we've all discussed the ways in which Senegal's voting history, engagement, and claiming democracy has been such a proud tradition, and really, you know, gotten the outcomes that were desired in terms of alternation and holding governments accountable and allowing new voices to be represented. So let us hope that that continues to be the case, and citizens and activists, leaders alike continue to engage towards that pathway. Bamba and Michelle, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us, your thoughts, and particularly in, you know, wishing for the best for Senegal together.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Michelle. Thank you, Rachel. And we wish the best for Senegal.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Ufahamu Africa. You can find more episodes, show notes, and transcripts on our website, ufahamuafrica.com. This podcast is produced and managed by Megan DeMitt, with help from production assistants Chukwu Fananya Ikechukwu, Alex Kozak, Harry Stoltz, and Macheri Muguero. Our non-resident podcast fellows are Ami Tomoklo, Fu Asedu, Exidi Olugu, Basil Ibrahim, and Hopalong Bokokane. We are generously supported by the Carnegie Corporation of New York and receive research assistance from Cornell University and the University of California, Riverside. Our music is courtesy of Kevin McLeod. Until next week, Safiri Salama.